took care of today what we needed to take care of. It's been a long time coming.
This is William Long. He's with a small group of reporters inside a training building just off the grounds of the Federal Correctional Complex in Terre Haute, Indiana.
He needed to take his last breath. He took my daughter's last breath.
He is Wesley Perkey. Moments ago, the federal government finally killed him with a massive overdose of a drug called pentobarbital.
He went to sleep. He didn't feel anything.
He went to sleep. He didn't feel anything. Witnesses often use these words. That's what they say it looks like, on the outside. But inside, at least this time, the forced overdose of a drug called pentobarbital wreaked havoc on Perkey's organs. Blood rushed into his lungs, collapsing them and potentially causing excruciating pain. Something akin to waterboarding if he was conscious. We know all this not because it was apparent to the witnesses. From their perspective, Perkey more or less passed out or drifted off shortly after the whole thing began. But medical files we received, including a report of an autopsy, documented clear signs of pulmonary edema. A second record, an autopsy of a different person killed during the Trump executions, showed the same thing. The two autopsies are the only ones known to have been conducted after the killings in Terre Haute.
We have new evidence today of the pain of lethal injection. This is a process the federal government plans to use to execute two inmates at a prison in Terre Haute, Indiana this week. Lethal injection is supposed to be a quick and painless death.
And hundreds of other records, collected by NPR from state executions, also showed evidence of pulmonary edema in the majority of cases.
We've obtained the largest collection of these autopsies ever assembled in the U.S.
Records are now part of a growing stack of evidence that lethal injection isn't necessarily a kinder, gentler way of killing. And it explains why more and more condemned prisoners are seeking alternatives to lethal injection. From WFIU Public Radio in Indiana, I'm George Hale, and this is Rush to Kill, a podcast about the secretive Midwest facility where all federal executions take place. A majority of Americans support capital punishment. According to polls, death penalty supporters also prefer lethal injection over methods like hanging or gas. Lethal injection is thought to be painless and thought to be quick, seemingly the most humane choice. But what if we've got it all wrong?
I had no ambition to have anything to say about the death penalty and capital punishment.
Joel Zivit thinks we've got it all wrong. He's an anesthesiologist and ICU doctor at Emory University Hospital in Atlanta. Around 10 years ago, this weird thing happened with a medication that he was prescribing pretty often.
Sodium thiopental was used by every anesthesiologist everywhere in the world.
Until one day, all of a sudden,
it was not available anywhere.
So he started investigating and learned that there was only one manufacturer. The drug had been manufactured in North Carolina, but the company was moving production to Italy. Eventually, Zivit found the answer, and it was all about the death penalty. The move to an EU country came with restrictions. The European Union banned the death penalty in 2008 and called for its abolition worldwide. The EU also requires member states to monitor the export of drugs to ensure they aren't being used for executions abroad. There's no single version of lethal injection. Many states use similar methods. They spell them out in detailed guides they refer to as protocols.
Let's be clear that the whole thing about lethal injection is it is designed, and this is not by accident, but on purpose, to mimic a medical procedure, a medical act.
Whatever you want to call it, a how-to guide for an execution spells out details including the type or types of drugs and the order they're administered. Until recently, most states use a three-drug combination. They start with an anesthetic, which was Zivit's missing drug, before moving on to a paralytic, then potassium chloride, which stops the heart and causes death. But starting around 2009, some of these drugs were becoming unavailable, which is why today, states with the death penalty are often shaking up their plans.
It's not that the death penalty with lethal injection is evolving because of some sort of thoughtful evolution of how it is that the death is actually occurring and whether it's constitutional. It's simply what they're able to get their hands on.
And that rush led authorities back to an older drug called pentobarbital.
It's one drug. One chemical that, when given in a large enough quantity, can kill a person.
Today, more than a dozen states and the federal government use pentobarbital alone in executions. It's easier to find one drug instead of three, and pentobarbital appears to calm the person taking it.
It was as if that they were falling off to sleep, and in that sleep state, they then just peacefully died, or something akin to that.
All that to say, Zivit had a busy few years looking into the evidence for and against pentobarbital.
Most people who had pentobarbital developed something called pulmonary edema.
It's a condition in which fluid accumulates rapidly in the lungs, a potentially excruciating sensation often compared to waterboarding.
People are actually drowning, in a sense, in their own bloody secretions, and that's how they die.
In 1982, the very first execution using any lethal injection method in the United States took place in, where else, Texas. Texas electrocuted to death 361 people before officially adopting lethal injection as the primary execution method in 1977.
The electric chair had too many possibilities for problems, for errors, and for like scandals that would embarrass the state or the prison system.
Maurice Chuma covers the prison system for the Marshall Project. He's also the author of Let the Lord Sort Them, A History of the Death Penalty.
Once Texas, quote unquote, mastered the process of lethal injection, other states copied Texas because it was like, oh, they seem to be doing it with a minimum of scandal and problems. So
Texas is responsible for about a third of the country's total executions.
Your name is Jim, right? What's the last name?
Jim Willett. They were getting ready to do the BI that bombed Oklahoma.
Willett served as warden from 1998 to 2001.
We were doing them so often, and it became routine pretty quickly. The officers all knew their job. They strapped all those straps on quickly.
His description more or less tracks with the timing and procedures the U.S. Prison Bureau seemed to be following in summer 2020.
I'd walk over to the door that goes into the executioner's room and open it, and the medical team would come out and start inserting the IVs in the arms one at a time, and I'd talk with the inmate.
Willett oversaw executions using the three-drug method, but after years of complex and arduous efforts to obtain all these drugs, Texas switched to a single one, pentobarbital. Former Attorney General Bill Barr's Justice Department did the same.
From what I hear, it's a whole lot longer than when I was there. When I was there, when I gave the signal for the executioner to start putting the drugs in the body, within a minute, you'd see the guy take his last breath. In every case that I can think of, he was dead way before then. But they tell me now it's 15, 20, 25 minutes. So I can't imagine having to stand there and wait that long. That's just ridiculous.
These comparatively dragged-out deaths are now routine in states that use pentobarbital. The federal executions in 2020 and 2021 were also longer on average. Texas has now executed about 300 people using the single-drug method.
Okay. Here it goes.
That's about the same number of executions Michelle Lyons witnessed as a criminal justice reporter for the local newspaper and then as a public information officer for the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. Lyons would accompany the journalists into the execution chamber. It used to go really fast.
And faster than everything I've read about the one drug method. So the drugs were administered in a pretty rapid succession and were really administered within less than, a minute and a half, 2 minutes. But we would stand there and wait a certain amount of time just by protocol. And generally that was about 5 minutes, which would always seem like the longest 5 minutes of everyone's lives. You just stood there.
I want to know why you guys are working on Sunday.
Austin Sarad is a professor of jurisprudence and political science at Amherst College in Massachusetts.
All right, I won't report you to the union. How can I help you?
Sarad's research focuses on execution methods and lethal injection.
A botched execution is an execution which departs from the requirements of the legal protocol governing executions in any particular state, or what departs, something that departs from what I would call standard operating procedure.
Sarah says the ever-shifting manners and methods used by U.S. states and the federal government are unique to this country.
Most other countries that have had the death penalty chose a method of execution and stuck with it. The story of the United States is quite different.
Firing squad, electric chair, gas chamber, lethal injection, we've tried it all.
The country has wanted to keep on executing people. At the same time, we've wanted to believe that the way we execute people is safe, reliable, and humane.
If it seems like you've been hearing more and more about executions going wrong, it's because they are.
More than 7% of every lethal injection were botched. The lethal injection protocol, the meaning of lethal injection has decomposed. Now, if I say lethal injection, it might mean a one drug overdose of pentobarbital in one state. It might mean a two drug combination in another state. It might mean a three drug combination in a third state. That's the real world of lethal injection.
The other real thing about lethal injection is that despite the extraordinary lengths executioners sometimes go to make the whole deal look like a medical procedure, there's not really anything science-y going on.
There's often little training, and they're tasked with a very complicated job.
And, of course, no mainstream medical association or board condones any licensed professional's participation in an execution. Quote, please be advised you have been selected as a media witness for the execution of William Emmett LaCroix on Tuesday. Further information will be provided at a later date regarding the time of the scheduled execution. That came by email a few days after I indicated my, quote, interest in watching the U.S. government kill a man on death row in Terre Haute.
Unless the war is just coming up here to talk to him for whatever reason.
This is Christopher Villalba on death row for his role in the kidnapping and murder of a young couple visiting Texas.
Hold on a second, I'm trying to see what they're doing with Will right now. I don't know what they're doing.
Villalba was fretting over what LaCroix must be thinking.
Okay, so he said exactly what I thought. They took him out there, and Ward gave him a briefing about tomorrow and, like, you know, the procedures and shit like that.
The Prison Bureau wouldn't let us interview people on death row. Information about what was going on inside the prison came from people like Villalba via their family members or attorneys they're allowed to contact. On the day of the scheduled execution, I walked into a room with five others selected to serve as media witnesses for LaCroix's execution.
Mr. LaCroix was sentenced to death on March 10, 2004, after a jury found him guilty with the intent to cause death and serious bodily harm.
6 p.m. comes and goes as last-minute legal challenges add 3 more hours to LaCroix's life. I'm sitting on a plastic chair, staring at the ground, when the death house comes alive. In front of us, William LaCroix is tied to an oddly shaped gurney. It's like a stick figure with his arms hanging down instead of reaching up. Straps on the wrists and arms hold him down, but he isn't struggling, just waiting. His lower half is covered by a light sheet. There's what appears to be a wired heart rate monitor hooked to one of his left fingers. His right hand is bandaged. IV lines are connected at both elbows. The tubes and wires tangle and disappear through a hole in the wall behind him. Back there, I assume, are others waiting for a signal. To our left and LaCroix's right, a U.S. Marshal picks up a black phone connecting him to a room full of lawyers in Washington, D.C. They'll know if anything serious enough to stop the execution comes up, but nothing does. This is the last time we'll hear anything from inside. Someone on their end controls the microphone and speaker. From our perspective, it's silent beyond the glass. The only noises we hear come from ourselves. There's not much to see in the death chamber. I'm staring right at the IV lines attached to LaCroix's arms. They're clear. I realize that despite gaming this out repeatedly, I never got a mental image of what lethal injection actually looks like. I don't notice it, but a clear liquid is snaking its way out of the hidden room and through the tangle of tubes, toward LaCroix and toward us. All of a sudden, LaCroix closes his eyes. He starts breathing a little heavier, a little faster, a lot faster. Then his face contorts into a grimace. Outside the prison, I switched on my recorder as soon as I could.
That thing that they told me about with the squeezing his stomach in from the...
It was subtle, but something strange happened to LaCroix's torso shortly after the drugs started flowing. That rolling contraction, which experts believe could be a sign that the person being executed is attempting to breathe but can't due to an obstruction, such as from blood pooling into the lungs. Later, the Prison Bureau hands out copies of a statement from the victim's father, Tom. I'm unaware that he never showed any remorse for his evil actions, his life of crime, or for the horrific burden he caused Joanne's loved ones. Today, justice was finally served. William LaCroix died a peaceful death, in stark contrast to the horror he imposed on my daughter, Joanne. But did he enjoy a peaceful death? For radio newscasts, I reported his torso, quote, jerked and contracted uncontrollably. According to the government's version, LaCroix drifted off into a peaceful sleep. If people like Joel Zivit are right, LaCroix might have been conscious the whole time, awake and aware as half a dozen people leered inside the room and scribbled notes while he gasped for air. Just standing there, not even pretending to help.